Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 191 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. My name is Chris Broholm, and in this podcast we talk to language learners, language learning experts, about what it takes to learn languages faster, more efficiently, and without getting burned out or failing. And today I'm joined by one of the community greats, Benny Lewis, the founder of Fluent in 3 Months, and one of the pillars of the community, I would say. And in fact, Actual Fluency was started in part inspired by his Fluent in 3 Months website. I would read all his blog posts and I would follow all of his language missions back in the day. So I kind of credit Benny to even this podcast existing. So I'm a huge fan myself. And today we talk about Benny's new language mission, which he hasn't done one in many years. And we'll get into why in the episode. Where he's learning Korean. And we also get into what he actually does in these language missions. You know, what does it take to get at a solid level in 3 months? What does fluent in 3 months mean? Like, what kind of level are we looking at? And we also get into kind of his hard times of the last few years, struggling with things like divorce and debt, and how he's been able to recover, get out of that, and kind of set sail for better times, feeling better. And I know there's a lot of people struggling out there today after, you know, obviously we had the pandemic and now we have the wars and the living crisis and all kinds of things. So hopefully if you're listening to this in the future, times are looking better, but you know, usually we can always use some encouragement on how to move on. So enjoy this episode with Benny. And myself, of course. And if you have any suggestions for people who I should interview on the podcast, definitely send me an email, chris@actualfluency.com. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my bite-sized language courses. These are listening practice courses for beginners, which is crucial because most listening practice materials are way too difficult for beginners, which means you don't get the useful benefits like improving your pronunciation, improving your listening practice, and naturally expanding your vocabulary. So I've got these 6 small courses for 6 different languages: Spanish, Italian, German, Russian, Danish, and French. And there's 100 dialogues in each of kind of everyday practical language. And the idea is they're very short, easy to do. They're not full of like tons of English or other languages. It's just a target language, so you can literally put it on repeat, go it over and over and over again. And once you've listened to all of them 100 times, 1,000 times, you'll feel all of your language skills improve drastically. And even then after, you could go into the course area and you can dive a little deeper with, we have translations, we have direct translations, which really help kind of discovering how the language works. And we also have cultural notes, so you can learn a little bit about the country behind the language and the customs and kind of being polite and even things like food and other things, traditions and things like that. So they're quite comprehensive. To find out more, go to actualfluency.com and click the top button, or simply go bitesizedlanguages.com. Enjoy the episode. All right, Benny, welcome back to the Actual Fluency Podcast. It's so good to see you again.
Good to be back, yeah.
A lot has happened. It's been probably about 8 years since we did a recording last year on the podcast. And of course, I was a guest on your podcast recently about a year or two ago. But can you give the listeners, I'm sure some of them are following you on your other platforms, but can you give us a little kind of catch up as to what your life has been like and your latest project?
Yeah, so I think around the time we would have talked last, I would have been on the tail end of being writing the language hacking books. And that was the most work intensive thing I've ever done in my life. And that really took a lot out of me. And so much so that I essentially needed most of the last decade to recover just from that project, because I was working 20-hour days. I was in sleep deficit for like a year or two after the project finished. It was extraordinarily stressful, and I was working with my ex very closely during the project, and we were fighting a lot. So after that, I took several years where I did not have anything interesting going on because I essentially just needed to recover. And my mental health was deteriorating. I was falling into depression. And then the relationship ended, which just kind of exacerbated things. But fortunately, in the last 3 or 4 years, I have been on a trend going back towards positivity again. So 1 year ago, almost to the day as we're recording this, I wrapped up my time in the United States. So I had accumulated a lot of stuff and furniture, and I was living in Texas. And ultimately, the America experiment was not for me. And I kind of knew this because, like, a lot of people know of me, ironically, not from my language learning, but from this one article I wrote about my cultural clashes with the United States. And ironically, I said in the article, this is why I will never live in America. But of course, I fell in love with an American and that changed everything. And then I did go live in America. And it's just for a polyglot, it's difficult. If you're in somewhere like New York, you can actually have a very multilingual experience there. But New York is incredibly expensive. So I wasn't able to maintain that. And I had moved to Texas because it was cheaper. But it wasn't the right country for me. And that just didn't help matters that, like, the lifestyle and what I'm known for and my intensive language learning projects and being able to practice my languages, it just didn't really work with the life I was living in America. So I'm so relieved that I was able to gradually figure out how to kind of distance myself from that, sell all my stuff. So I'm back to living out of a suitcase again. And since the last year, I have been moving pretty regularly. I started off with 3 months in Brazil. Then I was in Mexico for 2 months. And I started this year with 3 months in Indonesia. And now I'm spending 3 months in Korea. And in terms of the language side of things, I had been so rusty in all my languages, just living in an English-speaking country. I was kind of building up to potentially getting started with my travels again. And then the pandemic hit and I had to cancel all of those plans. So I had spent an extremely long time barely practicing my languages outside of very limited situations. And I really wanted to change that. So I needed the win first. And that's why I spent the time in Brazil and Mexico, because I already knew that even though they were a little rusty, my Spanish and my Portuguese were my best languages. So I'd get back into those quickest. And I had the best time ever in both countries and starting to feel like myself again. Another thing is, 1 year ago, I weighed 125 kilograms. And I have since then already lost 25 kilograms. And I'm on the road to continuing to lose more pretty consistently. And part of that is just the different lifestyle you have when you are not living in the United States and you're living in countries like Brazil, where you're eating more, you're walking more, all that kind of stuff. So everything's been working out a lot better. And after I got the momentum with the new languages or the old familiar languages, then I felt I was finally ready to take on a new language again. And when I look at the list of languages I could learn and the places I could go, the choice was very, very easy. It had to be Korean because I've been to a lot of the other obvious places you could talk about. And Korean is just such a big language nowadays with K-pop and K-drama taking over the world. I had never been to South Korea and I was just so curious about it. So I had my first in 10 years, my first fluent in 3 months project, because I wasn't doing any fluent in 3 months projects while writing the language hacking guides. Mm-hmm. So this is the first true project in 10 years. And I spent the 3 months in Indonesia intensively learning the language ahead of coming here to Korea. And now I'm back in travel mode and I am easing myself back into the life that I had before, not necessarily at the exact same pace and level of energy that I had 10 years ago, but I am infinitely better than I was 5 years ago. And that's way more important.
Well done. Well done. Really, I mean, incredible. And I really, today, I really want to talk a lot about your, you know, improvement and getting back on track, because I know that a lot of people out there probably sitting maybe in a post-COVID kind of situation, feeling in a bad state themselves. So I'd really love to talk about that. But first, I also really wanted to talk to you about the challenge, because I remember watching all the challenges back in the day. You know, you were doing Hungarian with Baland. I remember the Chinese one was very funny. You were talking to some girls at some anime convention or something, or maybe that was Japanese. But in any case, it's good to see those back. And what do you think has changed on your approach to that? From, you know, it's been a decade since you did this. So are you doing anything differently, or is anything changed significantly, or is it basically just, you know, vintage Benny back in action?
It's an attempt at vintage Benny, and to be honest, any of the reasons I didn't do as well as I could have done are because I'm not doing what I know works. So I got into a certain, I am happy with my Korean. It's reached about a B1 level in the 3 months. You know, as always, I always aim for B2 fluency, and I get a lot of pain for that from people, and, you know, who say I'm guaranteeing and promising, and I never say that I'm promising anything, but I like to aim high, and I'm fine with as long as I, you know, shoot for the moon and hit the stars or whatever. But unfortunately, the thing that would have slowed me down a bit this time was I simply wasn't actively going out of my way to speak it as much as I could have. Now, I was speaking it very regularly on my italki lessons with teachers, but I wasn't pushing myself in other ways. So it's like I'm looking at what I could have done differently. And it's not new lessons. It's the kind of stuff I tell other people all the time. You know, I ended up getting into a bit of a rush where I was just stuck studying flashcards for way too much of the day. And like, you know, it's the same reasons a lot of people, that perfectionism was sneaking back in. So the main thing I think is the loss of momentum. Because in the years that you would have been following me where I was doing one mission after the other, not necessarily consecutively, I'd have a 6 month break or whatever between them.
Sure.
But effectively, I had that momentum, and I've lost 10 years of momentum. So it's very difficult to get back into language learning. And it's interesting because Korean itself, I have nothing negative to say about the language, and especially since I've done a varied amount of languages that would have their own difficult aspects to them, their own different ways of forming sentences. Like when you ask me what's the hardest part of learning Korean, I would draw a blank, because I am going in with the same positive attitude that I've had in many of my language projects. I don't care why it's hard. I want to know why it's easy, and I'm trying to find evidence that can encourage me. So that aspect of my classical learning style, of the positive way, the positive mentality that really drives me to not lose my motivation, that has definitely survived through all of the difficult years. So I definitely really have been enjoying Korean. I don't have any negative experiences about it. But at the same time, just from losing that momentum, I have this block in my head that, like, right now I know a lot of Korean words, I know a lot of Korean grammar, and I still don't have the level of confidence that I would have had I done this 10 years ago, when I'm here in Seoul now and there's so many times I'm ready to speak Korean and I'm stopping myself and I'm second guessing myself when I really shouldn't be doing that. So, and it's not for any good reason. I'm not telling myself your Korean isn't good enough, they're going to laugh at you, because I've already gotten all of those ideas out of my system through the many years of learning I did before this. But it's a block just from the momentum that I had lost, and then a little bit lingering of the negative aspects of the life that I just went through. That, you know, I would definitely say I have recovered from clinical depression, but you can never say that you're 100% like completely over something. There are always some lingering aspects, and those lingering aspects are like stopping me and sucking a little bit of confidence for no good reason. Now, the good thing I will say is that the whole aspect of this project has been me working through these things. Mm-hmm. And I am not going hard on myself. I'm not saying I'm a failure because of this. I'm telling myself this is just a necessary part of the process, that I need to get this momentum back. So in the process of getting the momentum back, I'm going to have a learning process that is not exactly the way I wish it would have been, but that is going to be just me returning to the old Benny stages so that future projects can be even better.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like the journey of life. You know, you never make it anywhere. It's always you're always moving towards something. And I guess we have to kind of address the quick elephant in the room. Like, Benny, nobody can learn a language in 3 months to a B1 level. It's impossible. I've seen on Reddit, they say it's all fake, it's all made up, you know. But tell us, are you still, when you do the challenge, back then, I remember one of the things that kind of surprised me was the amount of time you would spend per day. So how many hours, just on a kind of average basis, do you think you'd spend for this Korean challenge? And is it more or less than the kind of last challenges you did?
Yeah, that is, I guess when people just hear the name of my brand, they immediately get like very aggressive, mainly because they would imagine it's a combination of fluent in 3 months and it's easy in your sleep or like in an hour a day.
Right.
And those two concepts are completely incompatible. And that's why when people have been surprised, especially because of the level of sharing I've been able to do now, is very different to how it was before. Before, you would just see the YouTube videos, whereas now I'm posting my Instagram stories. They didn't exist when I was doing my last projects, you know, which really makes me feel old, you know. Yep. But for the Korean project, while I was in Indonesia, I was working at it for at least 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. So even though I was in this beautiful Bali tropical place and there were parties from other foreigners, other digital nomads all the time, I could have gone and chilled on the beach and drinked a mocktail and just read books all day and like put in an hour's work and just said, there, I've done something. But I wasn't doing that. I made a big sacrifice and I'm proud that I made that sacrifice because I didn't want to be on a holiday in Bali. There's other times in my life I can do stuff like that. Right now, I really wanted to dedicate to this project. So I had no friends for 3 months. I made that sacrifice that like I could have. There's millions of people, well, loads of people I could have been hanging out with. I could have been practicing my other languages because there's tourists from all around the world. But I decided I'm going to make this sacrifice so that when I'm in Korea, I can then be social. And you can bet that I am going out every single day, socializing, dancing, all the stuff that I wasn't doing in Bali. So I get to reap the benefits of the work that I put in. And like, that's what I think a lot of people miss when they initially might hear of me and then jump to conclusions after reading 4 words of just the domain I registered, that they imagine I'm saying, I'm preaching about learning a language quickly and easily. And ultimately, it's not about either of those things. I'm not even about the quickness. I'm more about the specificity. I want people to have specific goals and specific timelines. If that looks different to you and you want to learn in a year, so be it. That's going to work with your lifestyle. My lifestyle, my brain is such that I have ADHD. So I need to accept that I am not the kind of person who can have a side learning project. I understand for a lot of people, that's going to work. I've talked to many other polyglots who have a very, very different learning style to me. And I appreciate that. And I would never tell them, you're wrong, you should learn like I do. But the way my brain works is I can only do things intensively if I want to make any significant progress with them. So I'm just never going to learn a language part-time for an hour a day, because that's just not how I work.
Right.
So I have to do it intensively. So if people want to follow along and see how I do it intensively, that's what ultimately I try to share with them.
I think that's great. And it gives people this kind of concept of find out what works for you, you know, because And this 8-hour thing, you know, I occasionally have mentioned it on the podcast when fluent in 3 months have come up, and also the definition of the word fluency is something that there doesn't seem to be an agreement on. You know, some people are like, oh, it's perfect in the language, and some people are like, oh, as long as you can make good conversation, a good time, a good speed without making mistakes, then that's also fluency. So there's also a bit
and
of
then
that.
Some other people will say if you're a functional A1 tourist, you're fluent, right. And you know, and unfortunately, that's another thing I have to deal with. And with criticism, is people will be like, "Well, Benny's definition of fluency is next to nothing," whereas I too put it at the B2 level. Like that's yeah. For me, that's why I say I'm very honestly, and don't tell people right now, I had a fluent 3 months project for Korean. I did not succeed at the fluency goal because I reached B1, and B1 is not B2. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to pretend that it's a different ultimate end goal. But when I'm fluent, I genuinely feel it's the fluency that a lot of people agree with. And, you know, even the likes of like when people try to think of like my polar opposite, the likes of Steve Kaufman, who, of course, I'm friends with. He also says that the B2 level is for him where fluency begins. So you'll find that a lot of polyglots are with you on that. For me, the C levels are more about mastery. And I've got C2. I got a C2 diploma in the likes of Spanish. And ultimately, that helps me to work as an electronic engineer. But it doesn't really enrich my life in useful ways beyond that. Like the things I really need to do, at least for me, because I'm an outgoing guy, I need to be social in the language. For other people, they're going to want to maybe work in the language, and they're going to want to fill their taxes in the language, or they're going to want to debate Kantian epistemology in the language. Right. If that's what floats their boat. That's not something I care too much about.
Right.
So being social is the B2 level of where, like you said, it's flowing. If I can go to the pub and function effectively the same as I would in English, I don't even drink, but I use the pub as an example just because it's a good social atmosphere. It's noisy, which is that extra challenge. Then I would consider myself fluent.
Yeah, sounds good. I just wanted to get that out there because I'm sure there are some people who have read one of the preachy, horrible Reddit posts about these language Puritans that are just, you know, there's only one way and there's only one definition. And so glad to get that out of the way. And the final kind of language learning, well, I guess everything's related to language learning in some way, but I also just quickly want to cover the Fluent in 3 months, the challenge as well, that you're running, because that's been running for, I guess, almost the entire period. You took it over.
Well, we've rebranded it now. It's called Bootcamp.
Right.
And I went with that just because I really wanted to emphasize the idea of people that, like, really pushing themselves intensively. So, yeah, that has been going. And it's been going throughout my years where I was going through a lot of personal difficulties. And the reason it could is because I have an excellent team at Fluent in 3 months. So Fluent in 3 months is not just Benny Lewis. There are several really important faces. And Shannon Kennedy, for instance, is the one who is face of the Fluent in 3 months boot camp. And she is the coach that helps people through their language struggles. And I always go in and I always do my live streams specifically for people in the challenge every single month. And I'm answering people's questions. So they always hear from me. And we have a nice community that I'm always checking into. And I was checking into a lot during my Korean project to help myself as well, to get motivated, seeing other people post about their progress and showing their videos. And it's effectively based off the concept of what was so popular about my missions in those first few months, where you're openly sharing a project. It has this 90-day deadline. You have to post video updates to kind of showcase your milestones. Mm-hmm. And that public accountability is a back of it. And that's why Brian Kwong was so inspired by this, that he created the Add One Challenge very, very long time ago. And he grew a decent community from that, but it was inspired by my missions. And ultimately, when he decided he wanted to step away from it, he passed the torch to me and I took over his Add One Challenge, which ultimately became the Fluent in 3 months boot camp. So yeah, I'm very pleased because it's a more direct way that I get to help people with their language projects and really emphasize this 3-month push. And like, we don't try to get people necessarily to fluency. We do guarantee they will have a conversation, and having a conversation by the end of 3 months is a lot more realistic for people who are maybe, you know, very busy. They're working a full-time job. They have a family to support. They don't have more than that 1 hour a day. So there is a bit more that they can do with that.
Yeah. And of course, there's been a lot of additions and changes and upgrades to the program over the years. I know you and the team are always trying to add more value and make it easier for people to stick to it, because that's, of course, the challenge with language learning and a project like that is following through and completing what you want to
do. We did a lot of work last year. We did a big push of a survey where we asked people, what do you love about what was then the challenge? And what do you not like about it? And like, as an example, people really didn't appreciate Slack because it was a new system to learn. It was, the interface isn't that great. And Slack was where we kept the community. And so we decided, okay, they clearly, it isn't working for people. So we need to completely redo this. And we moved it over to Circle, which people are absolutely loving. It's a very, very different interface to talk to the community. And there's a bunch of other things. Like I have so much material. I try to just say, here's like a thousand things I think that could help you with learning your language. And I thought that was probably the best thing to do. But ultimately, people complained and they said, you know, it's great to have all this stuff, but I don't really know where to start. So we restructured it into a plan of action of, here's what you should be looking at in the first week. So it's a bit more handholding, because a lot of people who might try it, it's the first time they're ever learning a language. So we really want to give them a bit more guidance. And all of that was based on the feedback that people gave us last year. And it took us a very long time to completely relaunch the whole system in its new form. So yeah, it's great to, awesome. I'm very proud of how it is right now.
Yeah, and it's, you've changed it so much from its original form. I think the original form was just a Facebook group and an email, something like that.
So that's pretty much it, yeah.
A lot has changed. And so in essence, what people can do is they can join for the 90-day challenge, or, well, bootcamp, let's call it the real name, bootcamp. And it's kind of like being on a Benny Lewis language mission with a lot of input, help, support from the community, but also from the team. I mean, you're also part of it. So if you feel like, oh, I struggle to learn a language in my bedroom, or, you know, nobody gets me at my job, they think I'm crazy for wanting to learn Turkish in Iowa or something, you know, that's a really good place to be, right? The boot camp
for all that. Absolutely. Yeah. And you'd be more than welcome there.
Fantastic. And of course, fluently3months.com, that would be a link to find out more about that, I'm sure. And we can put it in the description of the podcast. Yep. So, Benny, let's get into the juicy stuff. We've went through the language stuff. Let's talk about this kind of mental health mindset. So you've already described how you've kind of improved and you're on the way to on the path to, wouldn't say recovery, but definitely improvement, positivity, you mentioned. Can you just share with us some of those things that gave you that initial boost to even start that process? Because I remember you made a video at some point on your channel, which I'll also link. I thought it was a really brave video talking about, you know, it just seemed like everything was just bad at that time. Like, you were talking about finances, you were talking about your relationship, you're talking about your, even where you were living, you know, everything just seemed really bad. So how did you start kind of even beginning that process to dig yourself out of that position?
Yeah, I mean, like, ultimately, it was multiple problems at the same time. It was recovering from divorce and heartbreak. It was a 6-figure debt. It was obesity, clinical depression, all of these things. And I think the issue is, for a long time, I was trying to think, how can I solve all of these problems as quickly as possible? And especially with, you know, the lifestyle I live, I do try to do things as quickly as possible. Obviously, I try to learn languages as quickly as possible. But there's a big difference that you can learn a language. You can have some certain projects. People do projects very, very rapidly, but they do that because they have the energy for it. They have the mental capacity to. So like when I was learning Korean for those 3 months, pretty much the only problem I had to solve in my life was I need to learn Korean. But when the problems you have to solve is I'm obese, I'm depressed, this is not something you can solve necessarily quickly. It's not something you can have an exciting project about, you know? So the first step was I had to accept this is going to be a very long road. And it's going to take a very long time. And the second is I had to realize I am not going to be able to solve multiple problems at the same time. So the first thing I did was I tried to get on top of my finances. And while I was doing that, I wasn't really working on my health. I wasn't really trying to be like active socially, which would have worked to help my mental health. Obviously, you should try to do that if you can. But I decided I'm going to at least put my focus into this one thing. And I made a lot of sacrifices that I wouldn't have to spend as much money. And I got to a better place. And it did take a long time. And then the next one was in the first 6 months of my travels, when I wasn't going to learn a new language, I was just going to use the languages that I'd already was confident in. I decided, okay, the biggest problem I want to solve is the fact that I'm extremely unhealthily overweight. So for those 6 months, that was effectively the biggest thing in my life. Was how can I get to a healthier weight? And I did in kind of Benny style, I did it intensively. And it's not something I would recommend to other people, but the way I did it was something inspired by, I think it's called monk fasting, where it's not like intermittent fasting, where you're only eating for an 8-hour window each day. You're actually taking 48 to 36 hours every single week of not eating. So for 6 months, I was only eating for 5 days a week. And wow. I would not recommend it. Other people try that unless you see you can definitely handle it. There's a lot of physical challenges I've tried to put myself through that I've failed miserably, that I can't handle. There's a lot of diets I've attempted that I just can't maintain. But for whatever reason, I had the endurance to be able to go for 2 days without eating and to be able to do that every single week. And that was just completely game changing. And it helped me lose, because 25 kilograms over 6 months is very fast. It's very fast progress.
Yeah.
And I needed that because, you know, when you're at the weight that I was, there's just so many problems you have in your life. I already had all the problems I mentioned, but just by being overweight, you're already naturally going to be, and it's not even overweight, like obese, like overweight is a different category. When you're that level of obesity, you have less energy. So that's going to make you suffer and everything else. You know, like I love dancing, for instance, and for this big stretch of my life for like 7 years, I just couldn't dance. Because if I tried to dance after 20 seconds, my heart rate would be so high, I would need to sit down and have at least a 10 or 20 minute break after like 20 seconds. And that's just for somebody who likes dancing, that's just so disheartening, you know? So there's so many aspects of my life that was already completely consuming. So it had to be my priority. And like each of the aspects of my life, I've been trying to work on them one at a time. And in terms of like now, the theme might be more mental health in terms of I'm trying to be my old self again. And I had to accept for several years, this concept of the old Benny who tries to learn a language in 3 months, I cannot do that while I'm in the state of life that I'm currently in. I can't be intensively learning a language when I'm constantly checking my bank balance and I'm stressed about getting another overdraft, when I'm so out of energy that I can't even go for a walk without my heart rate going super high, I can't deal with that and take on a language at the same time. So I have to accept there's several years where this concept of the old Benny, it's not going to happen right now, but maybe I can put the pieces of the puzzle in place so that in some future day, I may be ready for that. So that's kind of what I've been working on these last years, is very gradually looking at all the parts of my life that were completely messed up and seeing how can I work on one of them at a time to get them to a better place. And it all kind of adds on top of itself. So like right now, even though I'm in the mental health stage and I'm enjoying Korea, I have the energy to continue with my fitness. So it doesn't have to be the one and only priority in my life, but I can go to the gym and I can be more careful in what I eat, because I have the energy for it now that I just did not have before. And it was very frustrating for me that I was in the place in my life where people would say, do you know what you should do? You should eat less and go to the gym. Like, this is some big, huge revelation I had never thought of. And it's very hard to explain to people that, as easy as that sounds, it's not that easy. When you're in a place in your life where you have zero motivation and you're feeling miserable, like right now, I could go to the gym. I'm in a place in my life where it's easy. It's fine for me to start my day and go to the gym. But and so I can get that somebody who hasn't been through what I've been through can be like, what's the problem? Just like walk around the corner. The gym's right there. It's so easy. And like when you have so many internal problems holding you back, it's not easy. So I just had to accept I'm going to work on things very slowly and gradually until I'm at a place where maybe someday they can be easy again. And that's somewhat where I'm getting to right now.
Wow. Okay. So you're basically trying to work on the things that you can influence. You're working on the things you can influence rather than, you can't really control kind of the how you feel and the kind of external things happening around you, but you can definitely try to work on the finances and the health and the other things. Like, you've also mentioned how much you missed the kind of traveling lifestyle. So maybe that was also part of it, just getting out and being, abroad again, not just in the house in the US. So that's really cool. And I it's funny how the personality again comes into it, because you're saying like one thing at a time, but intentively, rather than, I'll add one gym day a week, I will, do one good meal a week or something. It's not a small consistency. It's more like that. You need that big push. And then once you get into that better state, how do you then start to do that balanced lifestyle? Or, when you got the big push, you said you weren't eating 2 days a week. So how do you maintain kind of and this goes for everything, I assume, not just the food. How do you maintain that going forward when you know your personality is a little bit more all or nothing rather than like the consistent maybe calorie deficit? Or
yeah, it's tricky, but ultimately when you're doing something long enough, it does become a part of your natural routine. So while I was living in America, my routine was eat absolutely terrible food all the time. And by spending the time in Brazil and Mexico and beginning to watch what I eat and like taking those 2 days off, initially, the reason that works so well is because initially I could still eat bad food for the other 5 days a week, which was not good for me. And I'm not going to recommend that to other people, but at least I was starting to see the weight fall off me. And I needed that. I needed that initial win that, like, at least even in maintaining these bad habits, there's some light at the end of the tunnel. But then by going through that process, I've now changed it so that there's no way right now I'm going to have anything close to the kind of diet I was having a year and a half ago. And it's because I've gotten the momentum with these things. And I'm constantly thinking, what's the baseline I can do to make sure that this is sustainable? I still would treat myself to a nice heavier meal, but I try to limit that to just once a week, whereas I was overdoing that almost every day previously. Mm. And another thing is, like, as I'm adding new smaller challenges, like I said, I really love dancing and I really want to get back into dancing, but it can't necessarily be the biggest priority in my life right now because I'm trying to explore Korea. What I've accepted, which has been very helpful for me to take on new things that can integrate into my life, is I accept I will be the worst person in the class. I go in and I'm telling myself that every other person is going to be in better shape than me. They're going to dance better than me. They're probably all going to be younger than me because dance classes typically have people in their 20s and 30s, and I'm 40. So I accept all of that. And I think this is a big game changer, because a lot of people, when they want to start with new habits, they get so bogged down with perfectionism and comparison. And they see all these other people and they think to themselves, man, this sucks. I'm the worst in the class. Whereas I don't think like that. I think I am the worst in the class. That is just my reality. I'm okay with that. And I don't need to be the best in the class, because my purpose is to use this as a form of exercise. And I enjoy doing it anyway, even if I'm the worst. And I this has been so helpful to me and it's the same. I've had this concept in language learning for the longest time, that I embrace being an idiot. I embrace making mistakes because I'm okay with being the worst speaker in the space at that time. And that really, really helps me with other aspects of my life as well. That I am not interested in being the best. I just want to suck a little less every day, you know?
Yeah, that's a wonderful philosophy. I love that one. And so it sounds like you've never had kind of big issues with comparison, which obviously is a hotly debated topic with social media these days. So it sounds like you're finding out who you are, not just with the languages, but also lifestyle, anything else. And you just kind of do it unapologetically, like just that's just what you do. And you think that's correct? Or have you been kind of comparing yourself to others that are doing all this kind of bad times as well?
No, fortunately, that's more burnt into my personality, that I have not really, and I'm glad that at least during my lowest years, at least I had that to make me feel somewhat better, that I wasn't too much, there were aspects that was happening, but I wasn't too much comparing myself to other people. But yeah, I never feel that that's a helpful way of thinking. No. And I feel bad for a lot of people who suffer from anxiety and are constantly thinking how other people compare in their lives. But they have different stories to you. They have different backgrounds. They have different reasons that give them success. They have different challenges you don't know about. So it's why there's just no, for in my brain, it's just so illogical to compare myself to anybody else and be like, you know, I'm so jealous because that person has more money than me. That person has more followers on social media. It's a pointless activity because they're not me. They haven't lived my life. They've had a lot of different things, and I can be a negative pessimist, and I can look at the little narrow window and be like, they are luckier than me because of these four things I see about them. But of course, I don't know their life. I don't know a lot of things about how they're living. And having gone through the worst years of my life, like by far, I've had just things I can't even talk about that were just so horrible happened to me. It's also given me a fresh perspective that, like, right now, the comparison that I'm making is comparing myself to Benny from 5 years ago. And no matter what happens, I'm hopefully never going to be that low again. So it's a lot easier for me to be like, you know, I don't care if this person is like, you know, outwardly looks like they're so much happier than I am and they have so much more success in life, because I have so much more success than I did 5 years ago. I'm in such a better place right now that I can't know anything about anyone else's life to the full level of detail to be able to make a true comparison. But I do know absolutely everything about Benny from 5 years ago. And when I make a comparison with that guy, I am absolutely better off in so many ways. And that's an easier way for me to think of it. But I understand when people suffer from anxiety, you can't really just say, hey, don't think about it, and the thoughts will go away. So I do acknowledge it is easier for me to be able to put those thoughts aside. I am the kind of person who is okay with looking like an idiot, and I appreciate that about myself. It's helped me to achieve so many things. It's helped me to take risks that I'm okay with failing. And I'm really glad that that survived through all of these difficult years, because there are things that people lose in their personality when they go through hard times.
Totally. And the gratitude you mentioned is kind of like, well, yeah, that those times sucked. And I'm sure almost everyone listening will have had times or periods that were just terrible, to various degrees, of course. But the fact that, I mean, you're still here, you're still running a very successful language business, you still have many, many people following your missions around the world. And on a monthly basis, you have people join the challenge, learning languages and kind of spreading the positivity that brings, you know, the added cultural. So there's always positive outcomes. And I think that comparison to your old self is, I mean, that's some high level guru mindset there. I think that's really wise.
That's ultimately, like, you know, I don't want to overdo every cloud as a silver lining, because if I had a time machine, I would absolutely erase those terrible years from my life, you know. Right. So it's not like I'm saying I'm glad they happened, but you can at least try to put a positive spin on things. And having gone through the likes of depression has given me a very different perspective on the world, very different understanding and appreciation of what a lot of people go through. And a huge appreciation that I was able to push through it somehow myself. And like, that's the thing, is the challenges in life do make you stronger in some ways. Like, it's not like everything does. Like, there, you know, I would absolutely eliminate these things from my life if I could, but I can't. So I have to move forward and decide, okay, how can I look at this positively? What can I take out of this that is going to help me and help me have a different way of relating to people? And that's what I'm trying to do, rather than kick myself and be like, you know, if only I had done things differently, then my life would be so much better right now. But like, you know, we don't have time machines. So it's just not a good way of living your life, of thinking of the what ifs. You just have to, this is the life you have. And when I was very dark and in my worst situation, I still tried to be like, yeah, my life sucks and I have a lot of problems, but I have a roof over my head and I do have, I was eating terribly, but I did have food that I wasn't starving. And Fluent 3 Months did survive, and I have a successful business, even though my personal finances were suffering, at least the business finances were doing okay. And these were things to be appreciative of. And I understand when you're at the low points, it's very hard to see what is positive in your life, because you just see all of these terrible things that happen to you. And I had so many terrible things happen to me, but I still try to remember that at least in all my travels, I've met a lot of people from a lot of walks of life, and a lot of them would still have given anything to be in my place, even in the terrible moments I was living through. There's people who are suffering in so many unimaginable ways who would give anything to be in your place, even if you're in the worst place you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, totally. And what's the future looking like? Are you going to be any other kind of projects or challenges on the horizon, or are you going to post? Are you going to post more content on the topic of like self improvement and your mental health and things like that, or what are we going to see from you and Fluent 3 months and kind of like the future?
Yeah, I mean, because one thing in the last 10 years is I definitely have posted a lot less online than I would have liked to. But I it's one of the things I want to get on top of. So I really enjoy making video content, and I'm going to attempt to get into a consistent posting schedule, because like posting infrequently just does not work with any algorithm. So if you want your stuff to be actually seen by people, you have to post consistently. So that's going to be something I'm going to be working on. And it has been a challenge. It's something I've wanted to be doing for quite a long time. So I'm going to keep on working on that. And hopefully I'll reach a point where I am consistently posting videos and things, because I have a lot of thoughts I want to share, a lot of things I want to encourage people with, and then a lot of fun videos I want to make as well. So that's something I'm going to be working on. But after taking on the language hacking books, I like, in terms of very big projects, I'm definitely going to go easy on myself. Like I this year taking on Korean, and then that's pretty much it for me for 2023. Like after I've traveled Korea, I'm going to have other travel projects. I've got lots of fun travels that I want to do, but I'm not going to take on any necessarily big project, because I took on too much and I've learned the lesson of saying yes to everything and like pushing yourself to the absolute limit. I wish I didn't have to have learned that lesson, but I have learned it. So I'm saying to a lot more now. I'm accepting that means I'm going to miss out on a lot of opportunities, but that's okay, because there's a level of contentment I have in my life, which I am very appreciative for right now. I am extraordinarily lucky that I am in the place that I am, despite everything that's happened to me. So what that means is I have a certain level of peace that I don't need more. I don't need a crazy other project. I don't need another best-selling book. Right. I don't need my YouTube channel to be 5 million subscribers. There's a certain level of contentment I have. And as long as I'm still pushing myself, trying to expand on things, then some opportunity will naturally come my way eventually that will, I may be in a place where I do want to put my time and energy into it. But yeah, like you were saying, for the moment, running bootcamp is something I'm very passionate about. So I'm going to continue to be pushing on that. And then I will take on more languages in the future, but probably not this year. This year, I just need to reactivate the languages I'd already learned. And that'll be my main like side project, as it were, once I leave Korea.
Sounds good. And we're looking forward to seeing more videos about your Korean challenge and the conclusion. I don't know if you can call it that, but we'll look out for that. Maybe by the time people are listening to this, it would have already been posted. But Benny, thank you so much for coming back to the podcast. It's been a long while. You were on episode 50, and this is I think this is about 192 or something. So
oh, nice.
It's been a while. So, but thank you so much for. You know, your endless kind of work in language learning encouragement for people. I think that's a huge job, but also for sharing your kind of struggle so openly. I think a lot of people benefited from that. And you know, of course, with the COVID and now with the price of living and inflation and what else is the kind of problem of the moment, you know, I think people really appreciate that. So, you know, so for me personally, thank you for that kind of courage to post that and talk about that. It's kind of can be scary stuff, and it's definitely very personal stuff. So for you to do that is amazing.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing the message with your listeners. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And for anyone who wants to find out more about Benny, go to fluentin3months.com. And I'm sure it's the same on most other platforms. You mentioned Instagram stories. What's the handle on there?
So my travel Instagram is Irish Polyglot, and my language Instagram is Language Hacking. And then I'm also on TikTok, Irish Polyglot. And then I've even started different accounts in the different languages, which I link to in my bios on the accounts I already mentioned.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Benny, and can't wait for you to hear more from you in the future.
All right. Thanks for having me.